We want to start the Sugya Sagamora here on Samach Aleph, Amid Beis. Yesterday we addressed the Mishnah, which presents a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim about Tamud, whether Eish is chai for something that's concealed. According to Chachamim, there's a ptur Tamud be'Eish, and therefore if you burn a Gadish, an entire stack of chitim, of wheat or barley, you pay just for wheat and barley, even though there are kalim, there are utensils inside, and Rabbi Yehuda says you pay for the kalim. Amar Rav Kahana, machlokes b'madlik b'toch shalo, b'holcha v'ochlo b'toch shal chavera. If he lights in his own private backyard, let's say, and then the fire is carried to his friend's, his neighbor's haystack, is Rabbi Yehuda Mechayev Hanizkei Tomen Be'esh Rabbanan Patri. Avol B'madlik B'toch Shal Chavero Divriya Kol Meshalim Kol Shebetocho, meaning whatever is Tomun inside. Everybody agrees, says Rav Kahana, even the Chachom would agree, that if you light a fire in someone else's reshus, in his private property, then you chayev even for kalim. As if to say that that has a din, almost as if it were mazik b'yadayim, as if it were adam ha-mazik, adam ha-mu'ud li'olam. There's no p'tur tamun in adam ha-mazik. In fact, in general, Nezikin, there's no Ptur Tamun, with the exception of Eish, according to the Chacham. Now, in order to analyze, to understand Rav Kahana's distinction, we must ask the following question. In Eish, by definition, there was a Pshia when the fire was carried from place to place, and the lighter, the creator of the Eish, the Bala Eish, was not careful to prevent what was foreseeable, namely that a normal velocity wind would carry the fire from place to place and do damage, this pshia. And it matters not whether he lit the fire in his own backyard, on his own private property, or he lit it in his neighbor's property. In both cases, we're not talking about Odom HaMazik. If we were talking about Odom HaMazik, it would mean that he had a direct hezek in which he applied the fire to his friend's haystack. That's not the case. The case is that the fire was carried from one place to the other. Now, what difference does it make where he lit the fire? In both cases, there was a pshia on Eish, and the mazik of Eish kicks in. If there's a ptur of Tomun and Eish, that should apply whether or not he lit it here or there, whether he lit it in his private property or in his friend's property. And here I want to share with you an insight of Rabbi Aryeh Leib Malin, who was known as the Rashiv in Brooklyn in the yeshiva Beis HaTalmud. He was a Talmud of the Brisker Rav, and he had many, many Talmidim. I knew one of them, Rav Bruce, Zichrono Livracha. And according to Rabbi Aryeh Leib Malin, the definition of the Ptur Tamun, meaning the fundamental underlying yesod of, or definition of the Ptur of Tamun, is that the Torah doesn't consider the Tamun to be a mazik. It's not what you call a Ptur Tashlumin, it's afkas mazik. And we'll try to explain. If a person lights a fire in the private property of his friend, B'toch Shel Chavero, you cannot say that there's afkas shem mazik. You cannot say that this is potur, there's a potur tamun, because that's not a mazik. He actively lit a fire in his friend's reshus. That is a profound, that is a brazen, bold act of mazik. And again, whether you call it Adam HaMazik or Eish, I mean, I grant you it's not Adam HaMazik. He didn't apply the fire directly to the haystack, but he did light the fire. That lighting of the fire certainly sets up a chain, and we anticipate when the wind carries the fire just a few feet along, it's going to be Mazik. But if he lights bishalo, that per se is not a maisa hezek. That per se, of course, engenders a chiv shmira, and if he's poshe in that shmira, be chayev. But here the Torah sets up a p'tur of tamun, and the p'tur of tamun says that he's not a mazik on tamun. When you light the fire and you're poshea, and the Torah says yechayv for that which we anticipate from the get-go, the fire is going to burn, and that's setting up a mazik. So for setting up a mazik, you'll be chayev for pshia. But if the Torah says, well, this is not a mazik, and that's what the Torah says in Talmud, it's mafkir the shei mazik, then you're not chayev. In the case where you lit, says Rav Kahana, in Yenem's field, that itself is considered a maisa of hezek biyadayim, not in the sense of odama mazik, but in the sense of being responsible for a mazik of ish. And therefore, once you have a mazik, then the p'tur of tamun doesn't kick in, because the yisod, the gather of p'tur of tamun, is to be mafkir mazik. In Yenem's rishus, you're considered by definition a mazik because you actively lit something in his rishus. That makes you a mazik. Masha enkein, if you lit in your own backyard, you're not a mazik per se. You have chiyuv v'shmira, and under certain circumstances, due to your pshia, you'll pay compensation, you'll pay tashlumei nezikin. But if the Torah says, well, as far as tamun is concerned, that's afkos mazik, then you're not going to be chayev. This is all the shita of Rav Kahana. Rava doesn't like it. Amalei Rava. Rava turns to Rav Kahana and he says, ihachi, if you're correct, I don't know how to read the Mishnah, because the Mishnah sets up a distinction between classical Eish, where the fire spread to burn a Gaddish, and a particular case called Bira, where a person was responsible for setting a house aflame. And the Mishnah says that Chachomim Amod in that case, namely in the case of Madlik Es HaBira, that he pays even for that which is inside, which was covered and concealed by the walls of the house. And that's because the Mishnah is setting up, in essence, a definition of Tamun, which applies in the case of a Gaddish. We don't anticipate that to be kelim hidden inside the haystack. In contrast, we expect anything or everything to be hidden inside a house. That's what a house is for. And therefore, that's not tamun. So Rav asks, Ihachi adatani seifa, modim chachamim Rav Yudim, imadak sabir, shemishalim kol ma shebesocha, shekein derech b'nei odom laniach b'batim, is liflog v'lisnei b'dida. The Gemara activates a classical Talmudic logic that applies all over the place. What the Mishnah should have said, according to Rav Kahana, so argues Rava, is b'medvar mamurim, when is there a p'tur of kelim that's only b'madlik b'toch shalo v'holcha v'ochlo b'soch shel chavero, when he lit in his own backyard, and then the fire was carried into his neighbor's backyard. Aval madlik b'soch shel chavero, divrei akol mishalim kol masha haya b'socho. What we're saying is that forget about the chefza, you want to talk about whether a particular object is considered tamun or not, was it meant to be, that was not meant to be, that's a secondary issue. But we have something much more fundamental, and that is, when is there a p'tur tamun? Tell me first that there's only a p'tur tamun when you are madlik b'toch shalo, and that's when the Chacham insists that the Torah is mafkir l'shem mazik. But if you are madlik b'toch shal chavero, and you are a mazik, as we described earlier, then you chayv even for tamun. That's halach in tamun. We're now coming to limit the p'tur of tamun. Why did the Mishnah jump that step and fast forward to which cheftz is considered tamun and which cheftz is not tamun, that's already a detail, an important one nevertheless. But first, fundamentally tell me when and why are you parted from tamun? And the answer is you're parted from tamun because you didn't do an act of hezek. You lit in your own backyard, which in itself, in and of itself, is a legitimate action. Now you're chayav for shmirah, and the Torah says, you know what? You're not considered a mazik on tamun. But tell me first that chachama moda that if you are madlu b'toshal chavero, that itself by definition means you illegally, illegitimately are guilty of a maisa hezek. You did something biyodayim actively, which itself engenders a chiyuv nezikin, and therefore once the chiyuv nezikin is set and you are a mazik, there's no p'tur talmud. That's what the Mishnah should have said. And based on this kash of liflog v'lisni b'didah, Rava is going to reject Rav Kahana, as we'll soon see. And if you look at Tosfos Divrei HaMashkil Liflog, which is a long Tosfos here on the side of Samech Alpha Amud Beis, you'll see that he suggests perhaps a response to Rava's objection that the Mishnah was focused on the case of Madlik Besoch Shalo, and the Mishnah therefore wanted to create this pluta, this distinction between Holcha v'izika v'idlika es gadish shal chaver v'es beso shal chaver v'iroso shal chaver. But as we said before, the answer to that question is that's already a detail in terms of the Cheftz HaNizak and whether or not we define the Cheftz HaNizak as tamun. But Rava's argument is, let's get back to basics and talk about, you know, what is the definition of the p'tur tamun, the yisodah shel davar. It's a p'tur because you didn't create a mazik. If you went into Yenim's rishus and in your neighbor's rishus you lit a fire, you created a mazik, and there's no p'tur tamun. That should have been mentioned by the Mishnah. That's the most fundamental distinction. Elam Rava b'tarte pligi. Rava says they argue in two cases. Not only in the case where he lit a fire in his own backyard, but even in the case where he lit a fire in his friend's backyard. Pligi b'madlik b'tok shalo, v'holcha v'ochlo b'tok shal chavero, d'Rabbi Yehuda mechayev atomun be'esh v'avodin savri lo mechayev. If he lights a fire in his own backyard, then say the Rabbanon, he's potter for tamun when the fire is carried into his friend's rishus. And that p'tur of tamun is an absolute p'tur of tamun. Meaning, it doesn't matter when or why this tamun was hidden from the naked eye. Even if it was something that you can anticipate, it's derech lahatmin oso sham, it should be there. Nevertheless, and we'll see that's the case of Morigan in just a minute. Nevertheless, your part uplegi nami in the second machlokus is b'madlik b'shel chavero. He lights a fire in his neighbor's private property. Here there's no gzeres hakosuv of p'tur tamun. In madlik b'tok shalo, there's gzeres hakosuv all inclusive. Forget about rationale. You're potter for tamun, period. Even in the case of a bira. But if you light in your friend's rishus, now the chachamim apply svar. They accept and extend the p'tur tamun even to this case of madlik Bishel Chavero, but here they agree that in the case of a bira, there's no logical reason to exempt a madlik from tamun. So that the Rabbanan are engendering two different halachas over here. One halacha is a p'tur tamun that's derived from the pasuk ki seitzei eish. And Tosfos points out that Kisei Tzeish means he lit it in his own backyard and it traveled to his friend's backyard. and burnt his friend's house or his haystack, it matters not. The Torah says in that case, you're not chayev on tomo. And this defies our intuitive sense of logic. Why shouldn't he be chayev if he was poshea, if he burnt down his friend's house? Everything inside of it, all the tchulah, as we say in Hebrew, anything that's included, the contents of the house, that should be there. We anticipate that it's there. That's where you hide it. No, you're potter. Now the Rabbanan have a different halacha, and here they pick and they argue, they pick a fight with Rabbi Yehuda in logic about the logic of Talmud. The logical Talmud is something that you don't anticipate to be there. Rabbi Yehuda is not willing to be compassionate in that sense. You know what? I don't care if the strangest thing in the world was found. Like, for example, you know, a guy hides his wallet inside a haystack. No one in a zillion years would expect it. It's like cash in a milk container. You know, who expects it? Says Rabbi Yehuda, no. You a poshea, and we're not going to ask you what are the long-term repercussions of your pshia. Where is this age going to touch ground and do damage? You're chayev. So the Rabbi Yehuda sets up an automatic, all-inclusive machayev once you are poshea on the Eish. So not only does Rabbi Yehuda deny the Gzeres HaKosuv of Talmud, the Ptur Talmud, he denies even the logic of Talmud, where the Rabbanan pick a fight on Rabbi Yehuda in the case of Madlik B'toch Shel Chaver. There is no Gzeres HaKosuv of Ptur Talmud based on Kisei Tzeish, but nevertheless there's a logical Ptur Talmud which says that you can only be mechayev a person for pshia sashmira if he knew what he was getting into, what we might anticipate he would damage. For that, and up to that point, he's chayev. But for something that unusually is there, that he's not chayev. And again, you might say, according to Chacham, we shift the responsibility here over to the nizak to say, you know, if you hide something in a place where we don't anticipate it, You have taken upon yourself a certain element of responsibility vis-a-vis the mazik of Eish. Rabbi Yehuda Sovar Meshalim Kol Mashi B'socho Vafilu Arniki. Even if he burns down his friend's Gadish and there's an Arniki full of money that was hidden in the Gadish, Rabbi Yehuda says, it doesn't matter. The Torah says, Yechayev for Eish. And once you chayev for Eish, it doesn't matter what was damaged. Rabbanan Savri, Kalim Shadaka Lahatman, Begodish Kagon Morigin. Morigin now becomes a concept. It becomes an archetype of something that belongs there. You know, what they used to do is they had certain boards that had holes in it, and they used to use it for tfua. They would thresh and bang their tfua such that the chaff would go through the holes, or the opposite, maybe the tefuah would go through the holes and they would collect the tefuah. And at the end of the day, they would hide these crushing, these boards, which have a certain value to them, a serious market value. You know, it's a work of carpentry. They would hide it inside the haystack. That's where they would keep it. They wouldn't have to schlep it to some basement or to some garage. Or clay bakar, for example, there are plows and so forth that they are in this field. They didn't want to leave them exposed. They had to protect them. So they hid them inside this gigantic haystack. So in that case, the Rabbanan say, if you light a fire in your friend's rishus, and it catches fire to a gadish, then Kalim Shedakal Ahat Megodesh Kol Moriginu the Mishalim, that you pay for. But Kalim Shedakal Ahat Megodesh Kol Mishalim, if the Nizak hid his money bag inside a Godish, and we don't anticipate that to be there, that's not something that you're chayev for. That's a Ptur of Nizikin. Again, such a Ptur would certainly not exist in the context of Adam Hamazik. But in Eish, at least, you're chayev. And again, this is all because Eish has its own rules and regulations. The Ramban in Melchamis is wondering, if let's say a shor would attack chitim, and these chitim were covered over. Let's say they used to sometimes, as we'll see later, they would mechape the chitin with siorin. They would sort of set up a covering of siorin, a layer of siorin on the outside. Says the Rabban, in Shor, would you be potter for such a thing? For sure not. We never found such a p'tur. There's no p'tur atonement in Shor. It means that when the Torah says yechayfin iskei mamon, it doesn't matter whether you know and you anticipate that this particular object is going to be there, located there, be damaged or not. And certainly one would say that the Ramban's logic is adopted by Rabbi Yehuda. If you, the Chacham, agree that there's no gzeiros hakosav to atonement in the case of Malik v'tol shel chaver, then admit to me that you should be chai for everything, just like all other mazikin are chai for everything. The Ramban, based on this kasha, interprets the sugya in a different way. The Chazanish tries to defend Rashi's understanding of sugya by saying that Shor, once you are poshea in Shor, and the Shor is going to go out there and attack a Gadish, maybe he's going to consume the chitin and the siorin, so the Shor from the get-go is mezuman, is so to speak, and we anticipate it's set and ready to go wherever it can, and to eat whatever it will eat. And therefore there's no p'tur of chitin ha-mechupim b'siorin. But not so in the case of Eish. Eish can certainly be soref, a gadish or a bira, but we have to anticipate what the Eish is going to burn. It's not what you call, like in the case of Shor Mezuman, Lelech b'chol makom, Malahasik b'chol davar. That hazmana, which you find in Shor, doesn't have its parallel in Eish. Again, all this needs a lot more analysis, but we want to now learn the brisa that sort of summarizes the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, and this is what we want to do today, summarize that machlokas. Tana Rabbanan, hamadlik es hagadish, v'hayu bo kelim v'dolku. And now we're talking about a case where he lights a fire in his own backyard. The wind carries the fire and burns his friend's Gadish. Is Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shalom Kol Mashayu B'socho? Rabbi Yehuda says Yechayv even for an arniki. V'chachomim Omrim Eino Mishalim Ela Gadish Shel Chitin O Gadish Shel Siorin. Here's where the Rabbanon activate the Gzeres HaKosov Kiseitzei Eish, that the Eish went from your backyard to his backyard, and you put from Talmud completely, absolutely. And in this case, you're going to be chayav. And here we introduce our summary of the sugya for Talmud Beish, even if it's morigin, even if there are plows and boards that you expect and anticipate should be hidden inside the stack, you're still put. However, even in this case, because it's a matter of Tamun, we still have an element of chiyuv, and the Brice establishes that even according to Chachamim, roim makom kelim ki'iluhu mali tvua. The kelim hidden inside the stack take up a certain volume of space. That volume of space is viewed, according to the Hilchos Tashlumi and Ezekiel, as if it were filled in with chitim or siorim. And this brisa is very interesting because it's mechadish a whole new chiddush. We didn't really see this in the Mishnah. You know, you might ask that if you're potter on kelim, why should be chayv for saorim or chitim that aren't there? And apparently, what this brisa understood was that the value of tfua in place of kelim, that doesn't come under the halach of Tamun. In other words, from the outside view, when you see the Gadish, we would assume that that's through and through Gadish. And therefore it's impossible to set up a Ptur Tamun with regard to Tvua, with regard to Chitin or Siorin. When we define that which is Galui, it is defined by what appears when the Eish attacks this Gadish, what is Golui, and we assume the entire Gadish is Golui, you know, that volume of Tvuah is Golui. In the case of Kalim, since when we look at the Eish as it attacks this Gadish, we have no clue that there are Kalim there, that's already considered Tumen. Whatever is not Nikar Mibachutz is considered Tumen. All this, of course, is in the case of Madlik B'toch Shalom. And that's where the Brisa continues here on Samach Beis Amud Alpa Medvar Amurim. When did the Chacham say there's a Ptur of Tamun? That's only in the case of Madlik B'Sok Shalom. The whole Chavidolka B'Sok Shal Chavero. Avol Madlik B'Tok Shal Chavero. Is Mishalim Kol Masha Hoye B'Soko. And what this means is that if he lights the fire in the private property of his friend, and the fire now catches on to a Gadish, he'll be chayav for anything that we anticipate to be inside the Gadish. For example, Morigan and Clay Bakar. And that's even according to Chachamim. But the Machlokas, again, as we saw Rav Atarti come with me, will be if there's an Arniki in the Gadish. For that, the Chachamim say there's no logical reason why he should be chayav for that, he's potter. Now, is there any case where Rabbi Yehuda admits to the Chachamim, Umoda Rabbi Yehuda l'Chachamim, there is a Ptur of Tamun, b'mashil makom l'chavero l'hagdish gadish. Okay, now we're talking about a different case entirely. Here we're talking about a case, let's describe this unique halachic scenario here, where the Nizak is in the Rishus of the Mazik. Now, how did the Nizak get his Gadish into the Rishus of the Mazik? The Mazik invited the Nizak to use a certain corner of his field where he would spread out his wheat, his barley, whatever it might be, and then bale it together in a Gadish. Now, when the Mazik invites the Nizak to use a certain part of his field, which is called, in the language of this Braisa, Mashil Makom L'Chaver L'Hagdish Gadish, then the Mazik, the Baal HaSod in this case, takes upon himself a certain element of responsibility for his friend's Gadish. Says Rabbi Yehuda, I agree that in this case, the responsibility that the Baal HaKarka, which means the host, which is the Mazik, takes vis-a-vis his friend's Gadish, is a limited, it's not an all-inclusive, infinite Kabbalah Sachrayas. Because what happened now? His friend, who's going to be the Nizak in this case, Higdish Vehitman, he came into, again, he had permission to do so, he came in to a certain corner of the field which he had borrowed from the owner of the field, and he set up his Gadish, but he went ahead and he hid certain kalim inside this Gadish. And now the Baal Bayis' fire burnt that Gadish. The Baal Bayis has an element of responsibility. He was mekabel on himself shmira vis-a-vis the Gadish, but not to the extent in which he takes upon himself tamun. Ela eino chein mishalim ela dmei Gadish bilvad. He takes upon himself the responsibility to pay for a Gadish, but not for the value of the kalim inside. Now, I'm not exactly sure here, and I didn't see anything in the Rishonim, what would be if there were Kalim inside that took up a certain nofach, a certain volume of space, with the halach that we saw in the Chachamim, that you pay as if that space was filled in with chita, would that apply here? And I'm tending to doubt if it does, because again, here we're dealing with levels of Kabbalah's Shmira, and it would seem to me that's logical that the owner took upon himself responsibility for the Gadish, but only for the Chitim element of the Gadish, whatever Chitim would destroy. Now, the Brisa goes on and formulates a number of cases. And it would seem that in these cases, there's no debate whatsoever between Rabbi Yehuda and Chacham. This is like an overview of four different scenarios. The first scenario is Hishil, again, the Mazik lent space in his field, the Hagdish Chitin, for the Nizak to set up his Chitin, the Hagdish Siorin. And instead, the Nizak used his rights to set up a bale of of Bali. That's case number one. Case number two, the Mazik invited the Nizak to use his area for Siorim, and in a sense we could say that the Nizak abused his rights, and instead of setting up Siorim, unbeknown to the Baal HaSada, the Mashiel, Higdish Chitin. He set up Chitin. Chitin is a considerably more expensive item, commodity, than Siorim. Then we have case number three. Chitin, the Balabais invited the Nizak for to be Magdish Chitin, which is more expensive, but Chipon Bisiorin. The Nizak, in this case, the Shoel, came along and he decided to cover over the Chitin with a layer of Siorin. So what you see on the outside is Siorin. Or he invited the Nizak to be Magdish Siorin, the Chipon Bechitin, and he covered them with Chitin. What's common to all these four cases? Eino she'eino mishalim ela demei Siorin bilvat. In this case, the Mashiel, the Mazik, the owner of the Eish, will pay maximum for Siorin, the cheaper price, in all four cases. So let's go through the four cases. In case number one, he invited him for Chitin, but what was destroyed? Lamaisa, the Nizak didn't utilize and exploit his rights and bring Chitin in there. He only brought Siorin. It was destroyed in Siorin, and that's exactly what the Mazik will pay, the Baal HaSada will pay. In the second case, he invited him to bring in Siorin, and he took upon himself responsibility for Siorin. The Nizak went beyond his rights and put their Chitin. The Mazik has a right to claim, I never accepted responsibility for the expense of Chitin. In the third case, although the Mazik gave Rishus to the Nizak to set up Chitin, but nevertheless, he covered them over with Siorin. And once he covered them over with Siorin, it becomes that logical kind of Tamun, which even Rabbi Yehuda would agree to. And what's the logical Tamun that even Rabbi Yehuda accepts? That's the case of a Mashiel who accepts responsibility to go, again, verbally his declaration indicated he would be responsible even for Chitin, but what he saw befall in actuality in his field was Siorin, because there was an entire layer of Siorin that covered up the Chitin. So he says, the Mazik says to the Nizak, you know what, as far as I understood it, What was there was Siorin, and my responsibility, therefore, was reduced down to the level of Siorin. The fourth case is the most obvious case. It's not clear to me why the Bryce even had to mention this case. It's almost a repeat performance of what we know. And here's a case where he gave the Nizak Rishus for Siorin, and therefore, he's chayav for Siorin. Now, there may be a little bit of an element of chiddush over here. He was mechapes siorin. He covered the siorin with chitin. Does the mazik take responsibility for the chipui of chitin? You know, the extra couple of shekels that it costs for that sprinkling of chitin that was sprinkled on the outside layer of the siorin. But clearly, in all these cases, the chiyuv here is a chiyuv of Siorin. Now, we're going to see later on that with regard to Mazik B'Yodayim, the only p'tur that could apply would be Ones Gomor. But if there's no Ones Gomor situation, then even if a person is not aware of what the value of the object that he destroyed, he still has to pay for that value. However, in a case of Kabbalah Shmira, that's already a different story. And that's what we're about to embark upon now in the statement of Rava. So again, whenever we're discussing here Sreifas HaGadish through Eish, we're talking about a Pshia, we're not talking about Adam HaMazik. Now, what's going to be in a case of Rabbi Yochanan Shitu holds Isha Mishum Chitzav, and therefore it should be Mazik B'Yodayim, the distinction between, well, I didn't know that there were Chitin here because what I saw on the outside was Siorin, and again he gave him reshus for chitin, this is a pella. And the one who asks this kasha is Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz. How is Rabbi Yochanan going to understand this sugya? And you're going to have to assume here that the halach of ones in other mamas kicks in over here, because he never would have entertained the possibility that there was an anarchy in the Gaddish. He never would entertain the possibility that there were siorin under the chitin, or I should say chitin under the siorin, sorry. That's not like the case of a woman who accepts upon herself shmira. That's already a different story. Omar Rava. Now let's talk about Kabbalah Shmira. Hanosein dinar zav leisha v'omar la, and he says to her, he zari bo, be careful with this bag of coins of money, shel kesef, it's got silver in it, which is obviously significantly less expensive than gold. He zikato, if she takes this bag of coins and throws it into the Red Sea, or if she burns it, or just stomps on it and takes a hammer and bangs it up, is mishalem is dinar zav. There's no p'tur in other mamazik. Well, I didn't anticipate what would be there. Again, that's difficult according to the Ramban because of the sugi that we learned before in Eish. Because if we assume isha mishum chitzav, why is he p'tur in the case where he gave him a shus for chitin and he was mechap in siorin, and he says, well, I didn't anticipate that there were chitin there. That has to be reconciled here with this sugya of Adam Amazik, where she has no right to say, well, I didn't know I was throwing a bag of direi zav into the sea. Mishum di Amar la, because the Nizak has a right to say to this case of a woman of Mazekes, my havilech gabe dizkate. You know, what gave you, what craziness took over you that you would take this bag of coins and throw it into the ocean? Well, so that's a case of Odom HaMazik, a direct Maisa Hezek. She threw it into the ocean. But Poshabo, if she didn't provide the right shmira, and as a result the bag of coins was stolen or lost or whatever, is mishalem shel kesef. She only has to pay the minimum value, this is kesef, because that's what the mafkid told her she was getting. The omer leh, she has a right to say to the mafkid, netirusa de kaspa kabili alai, netirusa de dava lo kabili alai. I only accepted a kabbalah shmira for kesef. Had I known there was zav there, I would have provided a much more superior level of shmira. And if I don't have to pay the value of zav, I only have to pay the value of kesef. That's a case of pshia in shmira. And the klal here is that a shomer takes upon himself voluntarily a chiyuv shmira, and the chiyuv shmira extends, the scope of the chiyuv shmira includes that which was he was meschayev, and he was only meschayev for kesef and not for zav. Now, what would be if, admittedly, the shomer knew that that what was inside was zav? Is yada shomer achakach? He finds out, somebody notifies him. A little birdie whispers in his ear that it's in the bag. It's zav. Or he takes a peek inside. Would he still be chayav kesef? Or in that case, do we assume that there's an automatic upgrade on his Kabbalah, his Chayvus of Shmira, up to the level of Zav? And then we can have another discussion about the case of Shomer Aveda, where he doesn't voluntarily accept upon himself Kabbalah Shmira, the Torah imposes upon it. And according to Rav Yosef, as we saw some weeks ago, he's Chayav Mishum B'Torah Shomer Sachar. In that case, maybe even if he's totally unaware of what the value of the object is, he takes upon himself, it's imposed upon him, a chiyuv shmira of absolute, whatever the value is. In any event, I wanted to share with you a story that I heard from the Rav Zichron Levracha about his great-grandfather, the Beis HaLevi. One time there was a very significant convention because the government back in Russia and Poland was instituting new gzeros against the Jewish educational system to cut down the Torah learning. and the convention was trying to decide on which of two candidates would be the proper one and elect that candidate to go and represent the Jewish community to the Russian government and plea on our behalf, on behalf of the Jewish community, to be mevatel this gzeira, so that Torah study could reach its fruition. And there were two candidates. There was one very wealthy Jew who was a statesman. He was a diplomat. He was probably the best candidate in terms of being able to present the Jewish cause and the Jewish claim to the Tsar. The other candidate was much less eloquent speaking. He was not a rich Jew at all, not a very eloquent diplomat with very limited experience, but he was a Talmud Chacham. And obviously the members of the board, or the Gedol Yisrael in that convention, they decided to send the elder statesman. That would be a much better representative. He could present the case and formulate it in a very eloquent way, in a very powerful, and make that impression. Again, with all the respect to Talmud Chacham, but ma li velu. I mean, this is not about being mechabi Talmud Chacham, es the rabbis Talmud Chacham. And the Beis Halevi got up on two feet and he objected. And he said, nein, we got to send the Talmud Chacham. And why is that? And he quoted this Gemara here of no saying dinrei zav leisha. He says that for the Talmud Chacham, what's at stake here is dinrei zav. I mean, he appreciates that Torah is yekara mipninim. The statesman, with all due respect, you know, his priority is more in a different area. He doesn't have that appreciation, so his shmira will not be the shmira up to par for the sake of Torah. Fascinating story, which the Beis Halevi quoted in our sugya. Amalei Rav Mordechai Rav Ashi, Atun b'derava masnisa law. You understood this halacha about no saying dinrei zav, attributing it to Rava. Anan b'masnisa pshitalon. We know it as a simple halacha in a brisa. I don't know why you need Rava for this. It's explicit in a brisa. What does it say in the brisa? It says chitin v'chifan b'seorin. We learned this brisa just a few minutes ago. If a person invites his friend to use his field for the process of making these bales of wheat, but the nizak covered the chitin with tziorin, such that the mashil, the balabais, the mazik, understood that his responsibility was vis-a-vis tziorin, or a flip case, which is not relevant to us now, but tziorin v'chipa v'chitin is eno mishalom el dmei tziorin bilvan. Thus, as far as he was concerned, he understood that what he was responsible for was Siorin. That's what he'll pay for. Alma, we see that Amalei, that the Baal HaSod of the Mazik has a right to claim Nitirusa de Sa'ari Kabili Alai, accepted Shmira and responsibility for Siorin, for the cheaper product, the cheaper commodity, and that's what I'll pay. And my Chiv Shmira that he accepted upon himself doesn't go beyond that. Hachanami here also, Amro Le, in the case of Dinrei Zav, she has a right to say that Tirusa Didahava, Lo Kabili Olai. I never accepted upon myself a Eschaivus and a responsibility of Kabbalah Shmira for Zav. Now again, why Rava did not know of this price, I cannot answer that question. Omar Rav, Shamis Milsa, L'Rav Yehuda v'lo yadana mayhi. I heard some sort of a halacha with regard to the sheet of Rav Yehuda in our Mishnah. Rav Yehuda again says Yechai v'tom v'esh, but I don't know exactly what that halacha is. Omar Shmuel v'lo yada Abba. Rav had a name that was Abba. Shmuel, how could it be that Rav, Abba, heard a halach of my shamile, and he doesn't know it? Well, what's going on over here? So my shmile, what exactly, which halach did he hear? Well, so the Gemara says, L'Rav Yehuda Mechayva Niske Tom Veish Osu Takonas Nigzal Be'isha. Now, what's takonas nigzal? The Chachom Mesaken, that if someone was the victim of a theft, he is allowed to take in Bezdin a shvua, an oath, to testify how much exactly was lost, how much was stolen. And the halacha is that according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says Yechai for Talmud, again, what was Talmud there? And the answer is they made a takana. This is a nishba v'notel situation, which is exceptional, the exception to the rule of the Torah's shvua, that the nizak in the case of Eish in Talmud, again, this all makes sense according to Rabbi Yehuda, would take a shvua testifying exactly what was Talmud and how much it was worth, and the mazik has to pay based on that shvua. Now, the mavir, the mazik, doesn't know exactly how much was destroyed, but that's true in the case of Gazlan also, because the Gazlan might not know the value of the object that was stolen. There may be also, you know, secret passageways in the object that were hidden with jewels or who knows what. And in the case of Mavir, the Nizak has a tainus bari, how much exactly he lost. And even though in general, bari v'shem alav bari odif lahotz, but here's the exception to the rule, Chachamim made this takana on behalf of the Nizak. And that's called a nishba v'notel. And therefore, in the case of Golui, something which is not Talmud, and the Mazik knows exactly what was Golui, if he claims Bari, then the Nizak, even on the Golui, would be believed. You know, once the Rabbanit gave this power of Shvu, of Nishba Venotel, to the Nizak, then it's not limited to Talmud. He would be believed even in his Tainas Bari vis-a-vis the Golui. So says the Rashba. But the Ravid disagrees. He's of the opinion that on Golui, they never made this takota. The Nizak is not believed. It's Bari Ubari. And the Mazik will take a Shavuos Nishba V'Niftar. Now, the Gemara wants to know, how does this takonas nigzal apply in other Mazikim? Boy Amemar had a suffix. Osu takonas nigzal b'masur. Was there a takonas nigzal in the case of Masur? Masur means he was Moser, his friend's possessions to the Malchus. And the takana was made that the Moser has to pay damages for doing such, because the Malchus came and confiscated Yedem's possessions based on the Mesira. And the Nimsar, meaning the Nizak, has a right to take a Shvua, how much it was worth, and the Moser has to pay him. Maybe the takana was only made as far as Nigzal, but not as far as Masur is concerned. Is Aliba demandi Omar lo dainino and dina de garmi lo tiboilach? Demesiras nami lo dainino. According to the Mandi Omar, which is a sugya later on in Bava Kama, that you cannot sue a person for indirect damage, even if it's a garmi, even if it's crystal clear what damage is going to happen. Here, for sure, we have no issue that Mesirus is also nothing more than garmi, and there's no chiyuv over here. Now, what that means, that there's no chiyuv, we'll come back and we'll see this in a minute. Elkiti boilach, where does Hamemer have a suffek? Aliba the Badi Omer Dainino and Dina the Garmi. He says that Yechayev to pay for Garmi. And someone who is Moser Mamona Shel Chaver LaMalchus has to pay under the Halach of Garmi. Now you can vacillate back and forth. Osu Takonas Nigzal de Masur. Did the Takona that allows, in this case, the Nigzal de Masur, to take a Shvua and testify to the extent of the damage, how much he lost? The Mishtama Vishokil, he has the right to take a Shvuas Nishpa Venotil, and he collects from the Mazik, the Moser, Olo, and maybe they only made this Takana with regard to a Nigzal, but not with regard to a Masur. Teku, and the Gemara leaves this as a question. Now notice, if you hold lo dinin dinin d'garmi, that means that a person doesn't have to pay for damages that he caused. He only has to pay for damages that were created begufo bekocho by virtue of his direct action. And therefore mesirus is not chayev, ein dodin lechayev, because it only comes under the din of garmi, and garmi is not chayev, and therefore mesirus is not chayev. So there's no way you can talk about a nishpa menotel, since there's no basic chiyuv nezikin. However, if you want to talk about man d'doyin din garmi, and according to him there is a chiyuv nezikin in garmi, then we could vacillate back and forth, says our Maimar, whether or not within the context of that chiv to pay for mesirus b'toras garmi, there is a halacha of nishba v'notel takonas nigzal. L'maskana, the Gemara says, teku, we have no clear-cut answer to this question, and once again, we would have to apply the universal principle of hamotzi mechavel of haraya, and therefore the masur would not have the ability to collect even based on a shvuah. However, Tosus Divir HaMaskil Asu quotes Rav Haigon, who holds that there's a din of Yachloku over here. Again, the Moser would have to take a Shvuah on half the amount, and on that half the amount he could collect. And that's based on a principle called Teku B'mamono, B'mamono, B'mamonus Cholkin. And the Reed disagrees with this, but according to the Shita of Rav Haigo, and since it's a suffik not b'mitzius, but a suffik b'din, here even the Chachamim, who hold Amotzi Mechavel Raya as a general rule, would agree to Sumchus' principle of Yachlok. Hahu Gavra Devotash Bekasposa Dechavre Shadye Benara. The Gemara tells us a story about a person who took we call it a safe. What do I mean by safe? A safe is some sort of a large box where you lock up money. And a person took the safe of his friend and threw it into the river. And he doesn't know what was inside of it. Now, there's no way that the mazik can know what the extent of the damage was. But we're talking about Adam HaMazik Mamash. Asa Mare. So the owner of this safe came along. This is the amount of money that I had inside. Yosef Ravashi. Ravashi was the dayan. The Kama'ayin, but he was thinking, contemplating back and forth. Ki hai gavna mai. Can we allow the bailin to establish how much they lost and force the mazik to pay that? Omale Ravina la Ravacha Braid Rava, the Amri la Ravacha Braid Rava la Ravashi, Lav Hainu Masnisin. Isn't this actually our Mishnah? Distanu Modim Chacham Rabbi Yudah B'Madlik Es Habira Shemeshan Kol Mashi B'Tob Shekein Derech Bnei Odom La'aniach B'Batim. That the Chacham agreed to Rabbi Yudah that if you light the fire in your friend's private property, and as a result the house goes up in smoke, you have to pay for everything that's in the house, because anything might be in the house. And here too, the Nizah could certainly say that any amount could be in this kasposa, in this argaz. Omalei idaka toin zuzi hachinami. If the Nizek was claiming that there were mos inside, there were cash currency inside this safe, for sure he would be believed. Hacha, but what's the unique nature of this particular scenario that came in front of Ravashi? Dekatoin Marganisa, he claims that there was a pearl, an expensive jewel, that was hidden inside this kasefet. And that's unusual. My, what should we say? Mi manchi inish marganisa bekasposa. Shall we assume that that's like an arniki, that's like most that you usually put in a safe for safekeeping, and therefore he should be believed? Oh, lo, or maybe he shouldn't be believed. So the suffix here seems to be whether it's regilim, whether it's common practice to place a margalit a jewel, a pearl, inside a kasefet. If it is, then he, the nizak, should be believed in his claim, and we should say that the mask has to pay. Or do we say, no, people don't usually put things there, therefore he's not believed. Now, again, it's a little bit strange here, because Osus Dibra Maskel Mi points out, if the guy, the nizak, is the owner of the kasevet, is rich, then why is it surprising to us that he owns precious jewels? So Tosus comes along and he says that what is Gemara vacillating about in the final maskonis teku is he believed with his taina? No, I'm sorry. The subject is he believed with his taina, but even if what he's claiming is absolutely true and there was a marganisa in the safe, is the mazik chaya for that? Because the mazik didn't entertain in his mind the possibility that it would be there. You'll ask me, what about the case of Arniki Begodish? There for sure we said that he's patur. And the answer is, but here he might be chayav because it is quite a normal pathway, you know, to hide a marganis in a kasefet. I mean, that's what a kasefet is for. An agodish is not there for safekeeping. Now, in the case of the Isha, who destroyed Dinrei Zav, even though she thought it was Kesef, and there she pays for Dinrei Zav, here also it's an Onama Mazik case, that's different. Because there, the reason she pays is because she should have entertained the possibility that the amount of money there is Zav. Even though he, the owner of the Zav, hid that information from her, denied her that information, but that's okay as far as Kabbalah Shmira. In the case of the Kasefet, maybe we would say that he should not have even entertained the possibility that there would be a jewel there. So why should he take responsibility for that? In the case of the Isha, Tosus argues maybe she should have thought that the owner of the bag of coins was holding back on her, and he didn't want to be makabel shmir for something that's so expensive. She should have understood that psychology, or at least the possibility of that psychology. I would like to add a point here. Lefiani is daiti. The Gemara before was vacillating and came up with no clear answer about whether takonas nigzal applies to a masur. But that's because of dina degarmi. It could be in dina degarmi, that's not like a gazlan. On the other extreme, we have our case of Adam HaMazik. And in the case of Adam HaMazik, there certainly is this kind of shvua, because only the Nizak could know how much was in or what was in the kaspa. Amalei Rav Yemar L'Ravashi. We said in the Mishnah that if the house of someone was burnt down, the mazik has to pay for whatever is inside, even according to the Chachom of Rabbi Yehuda. Tan kasa de kasper bibira mai. What if the owner of the house, the nizak, claims that there was a very expensive silver goblet inside his house? Is he believed that the mazik has to pay that? Amalei chazina e inish amid hu. Here, there's a very easy test. If the nizak is someone who's wealthy, the islay kaspa, the kaspa, we know that he owns silver glasses, silver cups, is then that's one thing. Inami inish mehemnahu demafkide inshi gabe. He is a very trustworthy person. And how do you judge that he's a trustworthy person? People give him expensive objects to watch for them, knowing full well that he could pocket it and deny that he took it. Obviously, he's a trustworthy person. Is then mishtaba v'shakil. The Baal Abir will take a shvua, and he will be able to collect from the mazik the value of this silver cup. V'ilo, but if he doesn't fit into any of these categories, he's neither an Adam Ashir or an Adam Neman, is lav kol kmini, he doesn't have the ability to make such a claim. Because again, we're talking not about Adam HaMazik B'Gufo with the direct Maisa Hezek, but rather we're talking about Eish, the Mazik of Eish. All these cases are very relevant in contemporary times to insurance claims. And the insurance companies have to be aware of the fact that maybe the person who loses his house, chas v'shalom, in a fire or in a hurricane, will claim the world. And therefore they require appraisers to come down and check out and see what was in the house, and so forth and so on. The Gemara now has an analysis about the difference between gazlon and chamson. Amale Rav Ado Berei de Rav Avyo le Rav Ashi. Ma ben gazlon le chamson? What's the difference between a gazlon and a chamson? Amale Rav Ashi responds, chamson takes something from his friend Bal Korcho against his will, but Yoiv Dami, he pays for it. Gazlan takes something from his friend Lo Yoiv Dami, he doesn't pay for it. Amalei Saravada responded, E Yoiv Dami Chamson Karisle. Why do you call him a Chamson if he pays for the object? Vama Rav Huna, didn't Rav Huna say Talua Vizavin Zvinis Vina, that if you force a person to sell something and he agrees to sell it, then the sale is valid? And in this case, he forced him to sell it. He paid the money for it. Why is he a chamson? Lo kasha, hadi amar rotzani, hadlo amar rotzani. The only time in which a person is taliu v'zavin zvini zvini, and there's no violation of any isur, that's because he said at the end of the day, rotzani. But here, he never agreed to say rotzani. Now, is he considered a gazlan who's posel li'edus? So if you take a look in Tosus here in our sugi about chamson, he says that midraisi is not posel because he paid money. In the case where he doesn't pay money, then he violates those sigzol, he's posel li'edus. Here he paid money, doesn't violate those sigzol. He violates those sachmod. But people think in their minds that the Isur is only if you don't pay money. And in his mind, he thinks that since he paid money, he didn't violate this Isur, and therefore he's kosher liyedus. And now we have the final Mishnah in Perek HaKonis. Gets, which is a spark, sheyotze mitach zapatish. You have a carpenter, he's working with the knife, with the sledgehammer, and he's banging and banging away. Or he's working with his bellows, and as a result, a spark flies out for hizik and it hurts somebody. Chayav, this carpenter has to pay damages. And the chiddush here is that even though he doesn't have ownership on this spark, on this getz, he's still chayav. Whether you hold isho mishum chitza, but even according to Manda, isho mishum mamono. Because even if Isho is Mishum Amono, it doesn't mean that he owns the Eish, so to speak. Isho Mishum Amono means he's responsible to be Shomer his Eish, the Eish that he created. And therefore it makes no difference whether he was Mafkir the Eish or he wasn't Mafkir the Eish. And this is a discussion in Tosfos back on Daf Chav Beis Amud Aleph. Rashi has a different sheet over there. We discussed it at great length. That you're not chayav for Eish according to Reish Lakish, Isho Mishum Amono, unless it's actually yours. There's a machlokus we've shown him here, if what the Mishnah means is that he has to pay for Nizkei Eish, that means if the gets, Hainu, Shagetu Shalo, O Shalo Shamro. Tosus is of the opinion, and this is back on Daf, Samach Amud Aleph, that we're talking about a chiyuv. Not of Adam Amasik, but Mishum Nizkei Eish. And we're talking about a case of Li'achar Shenigmar Kocho Holaparuch Mitzui V'Hizik. So as long as, you know, he shoots out this spark and it damages, Tosfos would say, that comes under Kocho. And it's Adam Amasik from the point where his Koach terminates and the wind carries it further, that is already considered Eish, that's Momen Amasik. The Rambam Hilchos Chovel Masik, I think it's in Perek Vav, he says that the reason why Yechayev here is because he's like a Zorek Chetzo Evan. In other words, he's learning that the Mishnah is Adam HaMasik, not the way Tosfos understood it, that it's Mamon HaMasik because it's beyond the Koach of the Getz. The Mishnah now continues, and we have a little bit here about Chanukah. It says, Gamal Shahayaton Pishton. We're talking about a camel that has flax, a burden of flax on its back. The Avar Bishus Arabim, it was being led through the public domain, V'nichnas Pishtonu L'tocha Chanus. The Pishton went into the store. Vidolku Benero Shel Chenvani, and it was lit up by the candle of the store owner, Vihidlik Es Habira, and the entire big large house went up in flames, Baal Gomel Chayav, because he had no right to allow his Gamal with a Pishton to enter into the Chanus, and therefore he's chayav for the Eish that resulted. Hinia Chenvani Nero Mibachutz. If, on the other hand, the store owner left, and this is considered negligence, negligence on his part because he left his nair on the outside, is hachenvani chayav. Now that this candle is responsible for the house going up in flames through the pishtan of the gamal, the owner of the candle is chayav. Rabbi Yehuda Omer b'ner Chanukah potur. But Rabbi Yehuda says that in the case of Ner Chanukah, where there's a mitzvah to leave your Ner on the outside, then you're potur. The Gemara now analyzes our Mishnah, that according to Rabbi Yehuda, if the Chenvani lit his Ner Chanukah on the outside, you're potur. Omer Avina Mishmei Derav, Shmamina Mid Rabbi Yehuda, Ner Chanukah mitzvah anicha besoch asara. That a person is obligated to leave his Ner Chanukah within a 10 tfachim height from the Kaka. This akedak lemala me'asara, amayom Rabbi Yehuda b'Ner Chanukah potur. If we're going to say that you can leave your Ner Chanukah higher up, on a higher level, why would Rabbi Yehuda say that in the case of Ner Chanukah you're potur? Because even if the mitzvah is to place your Ner Chanukah outside your house in the Rishus HaRabim, but lema le, but the Baal Adira, the Nizak, has the right to say, Havile lanuche lemala mi gamal v'roch. But why shouldn't he take advantage of the liberal halacha that allows you to leave your Ner Chanukah higher up? Elav shmamina mitzvah lanicha b'soch asara. The mitzvah is to leave it in that low area, therefore he has no claim, the Nizak, to say, why didn't you put the Ner higher up? Amri, the Gemara, wants to reject this Shita of Ravina, this derivation of Ravina. Sorry about that, let me just read that back to you. Amri, the Gemara says, lo, there's no proof from Emish Liolam Emloch, Afilu Lamala Me'asara. You can certainly place your Ner Chanukah even higher than Asar Tfach for the Karka. My Amrin, if the Nizak comes to claim Iboilach Lanuche Lamala Mi Gamal Verochbo on a higher level than the Gamalim that you know travel through Rishus HaRabim, his cave in the mitzvah Ka'asik Kuli Hailo Atrechu Rabbanon. And the Rabbanon don't require him within the context of a mitzvah to raise the level, the height of his Ner Chanukah, and they allowed him to place it wherever he would like. In other words, they were matim to put it down on a lower level, even though he would have avoided this hezek had he lifted it up and raised it to a higher level. Halach lemaisis machlokes between the Rishonim here, the Rosh and the Ran, write that we should still accept the pshitus of Ravina, even though the Gemara was Docha Ravina, and therefore the mitzvah would be to place it in such a way that it is Toch Asara. The Rif and the Rambam, on the other hand, leave out this din, and you would assume that they would allow you to be Mekayim the mitzvah at any height. Omar of Kahana, just to finish the last Gemara here in the Perek, Dorash Rabbi Nosson Bar Miryomi Mishmei the Rabbi Tanchum Ner Chanukah Shinichol Amal Me'esher Bama Psula Kisukah. Just like a sukkah, the schach is above esrim amma, and therefore a person doesn't see it. It's too high up. He's got to strain his neck to see the schach. And the Torah says, "Levan yedu doraseichem." You should see the schach. U kib mavui, and so too in the case of the takonis chachom of mavui, to leave at his pesach a korah to be matirim tiltul, and if that korah is within 20 Amma and it's Nikeres, then it serves as a Korah. But Lamala Me'esrim Amma, that's not a Korah and it's not Matir Tiltul. So too, says Rav Kahana, the same halach applies in Er Chanukah. The mitzvah is Pirsum Anes. The Chanukah must be placed in a location, in a position that people could see it. If it's within Esrim Amma, they'll see it. If it's Lamala Me'esrim Amma, they won't see it. Hadron Alecha, Perek HaKones, Hadron Alecha. In Mirz Hashem, tomorrow we start Perek Meruba, the 8th Perek, Ken Yiratzon.